Chapter 30. The Pennsylvania primary on April 25th was to be Governor Terry's last mighty effort. Undaunted by his dismal showing in the debate there 2 weeks earlier, he campaigned with great enthusiasm but with very little money. "Lake has it all," he proclaimed at every stop, feigning pride at being the pauper. He did not leave the state for 11 straight days. Reduced to traveling in a large Winnebago camper, he ate his meals in the homes of supporters, stayed in cheap motels, and worked himself ragged, shaking hands and walking neighborhoods. "Let's talk about the issues," he pleaded, "not about money." Lake, too, worked very hard in Pennsylvania. His jet traveled 10 times faster than Terry's RV. Lake shook more hands, made more speeches, and he certainly spent more money. The result was predictable. Lake received 71% of the vote, a landslide so embarrassing to Terry that he openly talked about quitting. But he vowed to hang on for at least another week until the Indiana primary. His staff had left him. He was $11 million in debt. He'd been evicted from his campaign headquarters in Arlington. Yet, he wanted the good people of Indiana to have the opportunity to see his name on the ballot. And who knew? Lake's shiny new jet might catch on fire just like the previous one. Terry licked his rather deep wounds, and the day after the primary, he promised to fight on. Lake almost felt sorry for him, and he sort of admired his determination to endure until the convention. But Lake, along with everybody else, could do the math. Lake needed just 40 more delegates to lock up the nomination, and there were almost 500 still out there. The race was over. After Pennsylvania, newspapers across the country confirmed his nomination. His happy, handsome face was everywhere, a political miracle. He was praised by many as a symbol of why the system works, an unknown with a message who came from nowhere and captured the attention of the people. Lake's campaign gave hope to every person who dreamed of running for president. It didn't take months of pounding the back roads of Iowa. Skip New Hampshire. It was such a small state anyway. And he was condemned for buying his nomination. Before Pennsylvania, it was estimated he'd spent $40 million. A more precise number was difficult because the money was being burned on so many fronts. Another $20 million had been spent by DPAC and a half a dozen other high-powered lobbying groups, all working on Lake's behalf. No other candidate in history had spent anything close. The criticism stung Lake and it dogged him day and night. But he'd rather have the money and the nomination than suffer the alternative. Big money was hardly taboo. Online entrepreneurs were making billions. The federal government, of all bumbling entities, was showing a surplus. Nearly everybody had a job and an affordable mortgage and a couple of cars. Lake's nonstop polling led him to believe that the big money was not yet an issue with the voters. In a November matchup against the vice president, Lake was now practically even. He once again returned to Washington from the wars of the West as a triumphant hero. Aaron Lake, lowly congressman from Arizona, was now the man of the hour. Over a quiet and very long breakfast, the brethren read the Jacksonville morning paper, the only one allowed inside Trumbull. They were very happy for Aaron Lake. In fact, they were thrilled with his nomination. They were now among his most ardent supporters. Run, Aaron, run. The news of Buster's walk to freedom had created hardly a stir. Good for him, the inmates were saying. He was just a kid with a long sentence. Run, Buster, run. The escape wasn't mentioned in the morning paper. They passed it around, reading every word but the want ads and the obituaries. They were waiting now. No more letters would be written. None would be brought in because they'd lost their courier. Their little scam was on hold until they heard from Mr. Lake.